episode 2 of our Fueling Foodies. I'm so excited.
We're here.
And we have one of my most favourite people with us today. And I'm introducing...
Bold statement there.
I know. That's lovely.
I'm feeling good now.
We're here to just boost your confidence. That's actually what we're going to do.
Thank you. I'll stay.
Please stay for every episode. So we've got Kathy with us from Boundless. And I met Kathy when we were at Whole Foods with By Women Built. And she was there in these amazing leopard print trousers. And I was like, I need her.
And we
her.
Love a bit of leopard print.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
I was like, I need her in my world. She's amazing. And I didn't know anything about Boundless at that point. I hadn't actually seen the product. You know, I didn't really know a lot about it. And then you instantly put your arms around me and I was like, oh, I just need you. So
but you're very cuddly.
Am I?
Actually, absolutely.
I think I shoved a camera in your face the first time. I was like, get in a picture.
I felt very packed.
I was like, right, this angle's great for you. First time I met you, I was telling you what was your good side.
So, Kathy, welcome to Fueling
Thank
Foodies.
Thank you, Kate.
It's such a pleasure that you are our first guest.
Oh, I'm so excited.
And look, I really wanted to bring you on because I wanted to talk about your journey with Boundless because it is so inspiring. Like, it's given me goosebumps even thinking about it. From the day we first met to now, watching your growth story and watching the brand unfold and all of those quirky things that you do with it that are just so fun and bold.
That's like, really complimentary. Thank
you. That's what I want to talk about today because I think there's so many other founders and brands that can learn from what you've done. So if it's all right with you, let's start.
Let's do it.
Boundless.
Boom.
Let's go in. How did it start? Where did it come from?
So I think like you hear like lots of stories how people kind of, and this is how I started and stuff like that. And I think sometimes a lot of that is made up.
Yeah.
So mine is actually true, which probably is quite a novelty. But I worked in the city.
Okay.
And I basically worked in a trading floor and just basically ate rubbish all day long to fuel your body. And I was kind of much more in tune with trying to just to eat, to have some energy and carry on, not really thinking about food. And just really noticing like how that actually wasn't very good for me. And I decided to basically make my own snacks, but I was really interested in gut. And about how that could help improve your overall well-being and your mental health and kind of your serotonin and all this sort of stuff. So I started making my own snacks that were obviously good for your gut and just literally for myself. And then I decided to leave the city and think, well, actually, I'm going to make this a business. Obviously, everyone thought I'd had a lobotomy. Do you know what I mean? Right, you're leaving the city. What are you talking about? This is where it's at, love. We make loads of money here and all that sort of stuff. Oh, yeah, I'm just going to start a food business. Probably got no idea if that's going to work whatsoever.
But I'm doing it.
But I'm doing it.
You know
it.
What?
But I felt, yeah.
So for you.
Yeah, but for me, there was a real sense of purpose. And for me, it was about I'm not the only person that kind of isn't fueling our bodies right. So it wasn't just literally, you know, having a gut issue made me think about gut, because at the end of the day, we all have a gut and we all have to look after it. And it really felt that like food that was being offered in certainly in the snacking industry was still very much kind of driven just by, you know, a taste, but actually not doing very well for you. Yeah. And I could see like where function was going in other categories in terms of like dairy, the rise of kefir and live yogurt and all these things, and then drinks with like kombucha and things like this. And I think,
and it became a trend, didn't it?
Yeah.
It started to get a bit trendy, didn't
it,
as well?
I think so. And I think the big thing for function, and obviously our function is gut, but the big thing about function is now that rather than it just being the hot topic, it is a real change in attitude in eating. Yeah. And I think what we will see from here on in across food is everything will be function driven.
Yeah.
And unless there is function, I think you're going to really struggle to start a brand in food as a challenger in or a startup, because that is the way people, consumers, us, want to see something that's going to deliver them something more.
With a benefit.
Yeah, benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. benefit. And it's interesting because I was watching last night, I don't know if you saw it, I was watching Dragon's Den.
Oh, I watched it last night.
Did you watch it?
Oh my God, I bloody cried.
I know, so did I.
Because I was like, I cried for that woman who's like on a single mom with her like her son, and like she trained with like this basically amazing, like almost like potty training.
It was
a go.
It was a wee in a cup, wasn't it?
Oh, it was fantastic. And she got her money. Good girl. Come on, the women starting up our businesses.
But it was the mushroom lady before.
Yeah, and I love their products. I think they're really really good. I know she didn't get the funding and stuff like that, but they're doing really well in retail anyway. But I think, again, another highlight to gut, you know, in terms of like benefit, function.
Thinking differently.
Yeah, thinking differently. And I think that's what's needed, because if you look at kind of like snacking or any all major F&B groups, is that most of the big conglomerates own the group.
Yeah.
So if you look at snacking, I think snacking's 47-48% is owned by PepsiCo. Then you've got Unilever, Intersnack, and now Mars that have bought Kellogg's, all they're snacking on.
Yeah.
Which means that the small guys, you're going to have to do something really different to change the status quo.
Oh, and I'm so glad you're here, because you are so different. You really are.
In a good way, you're not just different.
Yeah. Crackers.
Right. So back to coming out of the city, then thinking about gut health, and that's how Boundless was born, right?
Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? And really to like, I really want to empower people to make better choices, to have the choice to make a better choice. And I think that's really, really important, because no one wants to be lectured to.
No.
You know, and we're not a brand that does that. But for me also, I wanted to make something affordable and accessible.
Yeah.
That's really important to me, because I think, you know, we talk a lot about obesity nowadays and a lot about, you know, what's going on in terms of people's health.
Yeah.
And I think this is really important, because, you know, being healthy shouldn't actually need to be a financial choice. I grew up on free school meals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that sort of stuff is really important to me, that the fact that healthier seemed a little bit more unobtainable when I was younger.
So true.
And I think that it's really important now, especially with like childhood obesity and stuff like that, that we should be making products that are affordable, that people can feel like, I can buy a bag of Walker's crisps, but I can equally buy a bag of Boundless crisps that are
same price, and it's just more of a decision, isn't it?
And accessible as well.
Exactly.
We are so bad. Like, we can get to lunchtime and I'll message her and I'll be like, haven't eaten all day.
And,
you know, 4 o'clock. Oh, I still haven't eaten. I need to just grab something really quickly. And that's where snacking comes in.
Absolutely. And we're a nation of snackers.
Yeah.
I think 97% of the nation snacks one to two times a day.
That's incredible. I mean?
And that's never going to change. And that was my point for snacking. I'm a big snacker. I love snacking. And I think I didn't want to try and come up with something or provide something that was going to try and make people feel uncomfortable, try and make that choice.
Yeah.
I think snacking, for good or for bad, is here.
Yeah.
So why not make it better?
Yeah.
Such a good point.
And also, I think, because obviously we've tasted your products.
We love them.
Thank you. Well said, lady.
Yeah.
We are big fans.
And obviously, rusting the bag right
now. Honestly, where is my little bag? Would not make great for the podcast, would it? Just me munching in the corner.
ASMR at its finest. But obviously we had you at our Fuel Live event and you were talking about like how to build your audience and all of that stuff. But we've tasted your product. We love it. And we've spread the word, right?
Thank
Everyone we speak to, you need to try Boundless.
Our sneezers.
There you go.
Exactly.
So talk to me about what's a sneezer.
I love it.
Okay, well, sneezing, I'm sure that people, you know, understand, is the fact that when someone sneezes, it spreads. And that's generally what you start off with in terms of like when you're first trying to gain an audience or really start to try and understand your audience, is word of mouth.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh God, I tried this. Mm-hmm. You must give it a go. This is amazing. Yeah. Or someone brings it to your house or they're sitting at their desk eating it. And that's what those people do. They're championing you. So they're the first people that your early adopters is another way. But that next point is where people are sneezing. They're spreading the word for you.
Yeah.
And that's really fundamentally important, you know, in the sense of kind of like trying to then understand an audience. Because I think there's a real difference of thinking about who you think your audience is.
And who they actually are.
Who they actually are.
And we always talk about data and we were talking.
Oh my God, it's so important.
It's so important. And instead of going by gut feel, you need to go with what's the data telling you?
Yep.
Who is your audience? Not who you think your audience is. And that's really important.
Well, it is, because when you're kind of trying to speak to your audience, if you're speaking to an audience that you think is your audience as opposed to your actual audience, then you're never actually gaining any more momentum.
Or connecting
or understanding them, like that importance of social listening.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of like understanding them. We spend a long time doing that. And obviously we've spent years doing it.
Yeah.
We continue to do it because, again, sneezing is the whole point. One person sneezes, on. I mean, and then the audience, you know, that ripple pool effect.
And have you found, more people. As your business has grown, so obviously you started and you've then expanded into retail and everything like that, have you found that your audience has changed? So those people that you're reaching, is it different or is it the same?
So
or?
we call her Grace, our audience.
I have seen this.
I've heard
that.
We call her Grace. And so we understand Grace in multiple of formats. So there's core Grace, who she would be, and then Grace ripples out throughout her age, sort of thing. And then there's people that want to be Grace. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I buy Vogue occasionally, but I don't live in Vogue.
I wish I lived in Vogue.
But I wish. Do you know what I mean? I am not walking the catwalks of Paris.
Damn.
Do you know what I mean? Because I'm in the real world. Yeah, you know, but it's not. I do love flicking through the pictures. So there's those kinds of things. So I think... And when Grace is in her multiple of formats, it's very then different where we need to capture an audience. So whereas somebody may appeal to us from a D2C point of view, that's going to be very different to Grace, who's the mum, who's looking at us from a multiple, as in like a supermarket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very different to Grace, who is in the start of her career, who is now travelling on the train to her office.
Yeah.
You know, so it's making sure that when you are listening to your audience, you've got the core, but you've got to have the ripples.
You understand how they grow.
Because you're going to meet them at different ages and in different retails. And I think that's really
so
super important.
And
I think there's also the fact that in terms of retail... And it's a really big thing in terms of, you know, when you're in F&B, it's the thing you're driving, of course, you know, you're driving an audience, but you're driving sales and you want to grow and everything else like that. And therefore, sometimes we are all tempted to take a retailer because, oh my God, I'm going to be in 700 stores.
Wow.
That'll be amazing.
It sounds exciting, doesn't it? There's big shiny numbers there
for
you.
We've made mistakes on this and stuff like that, and I'm sure we can probably get into those pitfalls.
nice way of putting it.
But what we've also do, it's really important to be able to be brave enough to turn around and say, that store is not right for us.
Yeah.
We will fail. This point in our
And do you think that comes
stage.
With growth as well? You actually been able to put your foot down and say, no, that's not right to us.
Yeah. 100%, right? It definitely comes with growth because, again, it comes with understanding your audience and knowing who your audience is
together,
as opposed to think. I mean, a great example for us is I think we'd been going like 3 months and Ocado said to us, right, we have a listing in Ocado. We were like, oh my God, we've made it. This is it.
Made the big time.
It was like that, like the flag. Yes. We're exiting in 6 months. You know, this is it. That kind of like, you know, magic.
Get me on that yacht.
Exactly.
Did you go in?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We failed. Thank God we are back in Ocado doing very, very well. So thank you, Ocado, for taking us back. But we failed because we didn't know who the hell our audience was.
Yeah.
We had no idea of like what ads we should be doing. We had no idea on the page format. We had no money to spend on kind of like any ads or social listening in that way and kind of stuff. And we failed. And we failed pretty quickly. And it took us nearly 3 years to get back in. And yet Ocado is now one of our greatest selling kind of accounts. And because we understand, and we understand Grace in her multiple formats within Ocado. But yeah, that was a failing. Okay. I think I'm quite big in the sense of, yes, to fail, you can learn.
Yeah.
Which of course is fundamental. But I also have this kind of like juxtaposition with it in the sense of celebrating failure.
100%.
Because celebrating failure actually doesn't help us.
Yeah.
No.
Do you know what I mean? And I know we see a lot of that on LinkedIn and things like this.
Sharing. Yeah.
And of course, everyone wants to be kind, inverted commas, but it's not, it doesn't really help.
No.
You know, I think we do have to say that failure isn't what we set out to do.
No.
Because otherwise, why are we doing it?
No one goes out to fail, do they?
Exactly. That's what we're doing. But
So just going back to the social listening piece, I see you guys everywhere, right? And I think it's because I'm now your number one biggest fan.
Thank you.
Always.
In an unmisery way.
Yeah, in a really lovely way. And I watch, you know, all of your marketing campaigns, all the events that you go to. But do you feel as though your social listening piece, so where you're finding out the most about Grace?
Yep.
Is when you're face to face with people at events. So you did a summer of events.
Yes. Yep.
Has that been the most fundamental listening part, or is it a digital listening
piece? I think it's both.
Okay.
I think when you're out sampling events, and we are constantly out sampling, it's very important to meet your consumer face to face, because they are going to say things to you that
you'd never hear.
Yeah. And certainly if they don't know you're the founder. They're like
you're
until afterwards that you say, oh, by the way,
this is my baby.
Yeah. When they've been nice to you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just like, okay.
Back off. I'll tell the boss later.
You do.
I think
I think the thing is, you meet a potentially more diverse consumer when you're out and about. Do you know what I mean? I think that's definitely because, and certainly if you're like doing summer events, but you're also in someone's office sampling, you know. So I think you'll meet a much more cross diverse consumer than you're maybe just completely have been targeting. But I think the social listening piece, in terms of, like, you know, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is, Google ads, all of this kind of Citrus ads, you know, kind of stuff, Beats data, all of these things like Nielsen or North Star, whoever you're using is really important too. Mm. And I think the thing is, that's the only way to get the clear picture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I still think you're still kind of quite, no, because there is the element also that, you know, face-to-face people could be nice.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I think
we know online is a little bit more brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what about, it kind of goes really nicely into one of my favourite things that you did
recently. Oh my God, what's she going to mention?
What am I going to bring up? So one of my favourite campaigns that you guys did was your packet of Boundless.
Get on the plane.
Get on the plane.
Yeah.
We've all tried it. Doesn't work.
Where did that idea come from?
Well, I have to say, I wish it was mine, but it wasn't. it's a fantastic from our team marketing, from Will and Liv, who do our marketing, who are just amazing. Literally just off the hop. And my God, we went viral. And
amazing.
I think we've had something like we're up to something like 35 million
Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think some of the funniest bits is people going, they tried it.
Yeah.
You know, we're like,
that'd be me.
Okay.
That
would be me. You're like, Kate, not everything you see online works.
I love how you would feel that you could just get on a plane with a packet of
Honestly.
Boundless.
I sent it to TFL. The team. I think it was like Friday morning, and I was like, have you all seen this? This is amazing.
But you know what I think is really important about that is that was just literally on the hop.
Yeah.
And it really was. It wasn't really thought out or planned out in that way. And we had no idea what it would do. And I think that's probably part of being a challenger startup brand. You have the opportunity to ask for forgiveness rather than go through all the red tape to approve what you're going to do.
Yes.
And I think that's probably, you know, one of the greatest things about being in a startup, challenger, or SME, is that you aren't moving a major cruise ship, you're moving a dinghy.
Yeah.
And you've got to give it a go, because you're never going to know if it's going to work or not, or it's going to go the way it did and stuff like that. But I have to say, yeah, we're dining out on that a bit.
I'm waiting for BA to call it. Why haven't Ryanair used that already?
Exactly.
Honestly, that screams their TikTok.
No, it's not quite Ryanair. We're like BA.
Well, no, but
I'll take any of them.
Ryanair are the viral ones, aren't they?
But I think that's the key bit, isn't it? It's about, you know, we always say, especially with marketing, because, you know, we specialise in food and drink. We work with small to medium-sized businesses. And
very successfully, Kate. Very,
thank you. Yeah. We work really hard for it because we're so passionate about it. But it's all about that testing, learning and optimising piece. Because when budgets aren't so high and when...
We did that for nothing. Mm. Well, someone actually was going on holiday, you know, and that's the thing.
But I think that,
we are looking
that's
for
the power,
budgets.
Isn't it, that we talk about, we were saying it before, that being real and just that just raw content is now where organic reach is. Don't over-marketed campaigns on social media don't work.
Yeah.
And that is the power now.
Oh, we worked out as well. Had we spent money to try and make that work. It was like well over £1 million, which I can assure you we don't have.
No.
But then no one does. And I think spend on social media campaigns.
But I think it's hard, isn't it? Do you know what I mean, in the sense of knowing what will happen, and you can't know.
And that's what we've said as well. You'll never know what's going to go viral. And even obviously, you guys have had that viral video.
We don't know if we can do it again.
You can do it exactly. There is no written rule of how you did it and what worked and why people
love
it.
And we say, you know one unless you get a decent assist. All right. And we got a couple of them for that.
I love it.
Do you know what I mean? We held on as long as we could for the London Underground. Like, until we got about the third one, we were like, okay, we better take
probably
a towel out.
Probably just stop
that.
Love that. Yeah, and I think being, something that you guys always advocate is being bold, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I'm going to use another one of my favourites, the credit card. The credit card moment.
Credit card.
Can you tell she's the biggest fan?
Oh, yeah, I'm your biggest fan.
Bless Kate.
We have to sometimes tell her, like, come on. There is other brands. Come on, Kate.
The credit card moment. Like, the credit card had gone missing. I mean, look, you tell me.
Oh, my
great.
God, right? Yes. I bloody didn't know, right? Literally, the wind-ups they do for me. And you would think, right,
that
at my age and my life experience, that I would get that they were winding me up. And I don't. All the time, honestly, I was literally like, I was like, yeah. Well, what you done with it then? I didn't realise, but I'd gone on into my life. Oh, that's it. Now I'm going to have to phone the bloody bank. I'm going to be on that for 2 hours. And they like cracking up.
Don't know how they did it. I don't. I would have been broken.
I don't know if you see the one where they were like making me throw these packets up in the air. Right? Throw these packets. Come on, we need that. We need to film that. So, all right. Okay. Yeah. And then like, I was like, oh, I've had enough of this. Do you know what I mean? And then one of our guys, Del, he goes, that's not very gut happy, Kathy. I went, oh, you get bloody gut happy. it's just like, and then
it's the off the cuff moment.
But it is,
but
it's
so
real.
We tell Kate
and
this
I think that's
all
the thing. It's
the time.
Real. And I think we live in a world where, in terms of social media and things like that, that everything is so unreal to look real that I think we find a lot of time people are trying to stage real, and what actually is real is so much more appealing to people.
And personal.
True. Yes.
So, it's, much it's so much more personal as well.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difficulty there, isn't there? Because when you grow a brand, you build a brand, you become so precious about it.
Yeah, I understand that.
And I think it's really difficult to disjoint from, how do we take this brand from the point it is now and how do we grow it? And I just think you've totally grasped that because you've had a brand, you've got the great product, there's appetite for it.
Yeah.
And you've just let the brand flourish.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really important.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I think in terms of how we work at Boundless, we work, and I instill that in within the whole team, is we're very collaborative.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as a bad idea.
Yeah.
Let's have it on the table. How, shall we do it? But let's have the idea out there.
Yeah.
And let's have a thing. And I think that's really important. I think also for us, and I think it's the other important to other people in F&B, if that's how their brand, they want to see their brand visualised, is we are fun.
Yeah.
And, we are about, we're a snack. It's about enjoyment.
Exactly.
It's about having some fun with it. And I think if you allow that within your brand, then I think that opens you up to allowing a lot more ability to go, let's give that a go, or let's that give a go.
And there's no bad idea, especially when you're being real. And I think we've had to tell you this as well. We were talking about it before, about the fact that social media doesn't need to be polished. And we long gone are the aesthetic feeds and pretty TikToks. And we're like, Kate, we just want to do a funny TikTok.
I'm like, that cover doesn't look right.
And I'm like, Kate, let it go. Let it go. We have battles about it, but actually this is proof that
I'm a really big believer.
Yourself.
I don't know if Morgan Gave, and she's amazing. She's a food futurologist. I have massive respect
what a name.
For her. Yeah, she's really very, I really respect her. And she's been talking about for the last few years about the imperfect now being the perfect. And she talked about the fact that unpolished is going to be much more what people want to see, because people can't live up to perfect standards because life isn't like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important.
It breaks that fourth wall, doesn't it? About actually what's real life and am I going to be more likely to buy a product from someone who is just like me?
Yeah.
And actually they understand what I need and I don't have time when I'm, walking the dogs at this time, got to start work at this time, want to fit and go to the gym. Yeah. Oh my God, where's my lunch break?
Rather than they've done then, 5 hours of yoga before they got up, and then
it's that whole we've all got the same 24 hours in a day.
Steamed everything before. I mean, it just
been on a sauna,
exactly. Yeah. And then it's by the way, life. I still look amazing. Yeah. I suppose it must be like when you first have a boyfriend, and then you wake up in the morning and you just see yourself, and you quickly go to the bath and put all your makeup on and lay that down.
And now we're all here in our Christmas pajamas.
Every morning. This is how glamorous I look, rather than my hair's all over the place, mascara running down my face.
In your big fluffy pajamas.
And you're like, exactly. Morning, right. I'm not looking.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's that,
it's
right?
So honestly, true. Everyone we all are there looking ugly and snacking away.
Ourselves.
We're all ourselves. And I want my brand to make me feel comfortable. And you know what? That's what Boundless does. And I think it does it well that I can feel comfortable sitting at home. I might not have gone to the gym, but I'm eating a healthy snack.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
what? I'm not being judged for that. And it's not that level of,
removed.
I'm not being gut healthy because I've not done this. Yeah. I can still enjoy my Boundless snack.
Making small steps.
Exactly.
That's what's actually more obtainable.
100%.
And actually more sustainable.
Yeah. So that's dovetailed into marketing. We've kind of touched on it. You know, we sit in it. We live and breathe digital. Literally live and breathe it.
Impressed. I am
Thank
impressed.
You. Thank you. It takes a lot. But your biggest learner, I guess, for food and drink brands like you that are looking to grow, looking to scale, what is your number one biggest piece of advice for them from a marketing perspective? Because we can tell them, right? But I want to know what yours is.
Yeah, okay. I would be very much like, you got to be true. In terms of from marketing, in terms of like how you are speaking as a brand, be true. Because if you are trying to get out there and understand or attract a consumer, I think you're going to be very much found out very quickly if you're not true. So it's like having those core values that are lived through your marketing. So who you're appealing to, in what way you're appealing to them from a marketing point of view, you know, whether it's kind of like, you know, advertising in some way, you know, in terms of whether that be social media or you're taking an advert in a magazine, whatever it is, you need to be true about what you're saying. And you're going to have real core values as a brand behind that.
So what are your core values?
So honesty.
Love that.
Is really important. And that, and I like us to try and live our core values as a team, as well as the brand. But what we are giving to our consumer, integrity.
Yeah.
You know, is again really natural. Is really important to us because of what we do.
Well, you're community, giving people food, aren't you?
You know, it's community, because snacking's community. We are a community. 100%. That's what we try to underline that by sustainability. And sustainability isn't just having like the best packaging that's sustainable. It's about sustainability in terms of your whole chain, but in terms of like also what you're doing with your consumer. Is it sustainable? We'll do what we can sustainably. Do you know what I mean? That sort of stuff. And I think that's really important, having those values. Like, you know, we work with a charity partner, Frank Water, which I've worked with from get-go. That's really important to me, because I think you should do good from the start.
Yeah.
And it's not something you should just think, well, I need to do that.
You don't want to do it to show face, do you?
Exactly. It should be something that you believe in. Yeah. And I think that honesty, you know, we always say to our consumer, we've got your back. And I think that's really important. We've got each other's back as a team.
Yeah.
And I want our consumers to know that we are never going to let them down. We're never going to make something for you that isn't true.
But I think that shows, doesn't it, that you are such a strong team and that you've got that foundation and belief behind you that it shows through in the product and the marketing and the business. Like, it's not just you're putting it out for the sake of it. Like you said, you started it because you wanted it.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't just start it because why not throw another product out there? You actually believed in it to get go. And I think that shows throughout. And that's so important nowadays.
To your point, Kate, about like, you know, it seems like we're everywhere and all this kind of stuff, which of course that's the whole point, isn't it? You
see, like, means marketing is doing great.
But I think it's also that sort of stuff. It's also, you know, being able to reveal that it's not perfect, you know, and that's the marketing, I think, is
so real. It's true.
It's the new form of marketing.
Yeah, 100%. Exactly. 100%. You know, which is very alien to lots of the big conglomerates, which is why they get nervous about challenger brands and SMEs, startups.
Because they're not afraid to make those mistakes. Yeah, if a big brand makes a mistake.
Yeah, and they're not afraid to call it out.
Yeah.
But when they get nervous, though, how exciting.
Do you
get a little bit like,
oh, yeah, love it. Love stealing market share.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, again, when you talk about data, that's really important for us, because we can see that we are actually growing the function category in snacking. We are the number one driver for that, which is awesome.
Amazing.
You know, but it's also, that's really important to us because it knows that we are doing the right thing in the right channels, but it also means that we're bringing our consumers along with it, as in we are gaining coping for the right things. And yeah, and obviously the big guys do get nervous in that way. I mean, in the sense, obviously, they're billions and billions and billions, but they do. And I think if there wasn't for brands like ourselves and other brands within the F&B space challenging, then we would still have a lot of rubbish sitting on shelves nothing would change.
Nothing would change.
Everyone would get too comfortable.
Everybody would just get comfortable with what's on the shelves.
They wouldn't change. They'll bring out more stuff that is the same crap. Do you know what I mean? And we'd all buy into it because, and that's
because there's no one making us think.
Yeah, and exactly. And these categories have not been changed for decades.
Yeah, I was just going to say decades and decades.
And so it's exciting.
Yeah, it is. You know,
it's really exciting. You know, because it really impacts all of us.
Yeah.
This sort of
thing. Going back to that stay true bit, and obviously your marketing mix, and that means that you know, because your market share is increasing, that you know what to dial up on.
Yes, exactly.
So that's where that data piece is then really fundamental.
And I think also from a data point of view is that, you know, when you're trying to pitch into getting into new retailers or something, data is now starting to become really important because just saying, I've got...
What types of questions do they ask?
Well, they would want to be
How many followers you've got?
Yeah, they will ask about followers, but it's like what's your engagement?
Followers
because we
don't
could work. All like, you know, you could have 200,000 followers, but you get like one like.
Yeah.
You know, so what does it really mean? Or you're following 200,000 people and 200,000 people are following you back, you know, that sort of stuff. You know, things like, you know, for us, I think we did quite a brave thing recently. Like we used Klaviyo as kind of getting out a newsletter and things like that. And we literally culled our list kind of like, and.
But you should.
But you should. You should. But it's brave because you think to yourself, okay, we've got these, you know, tens and tens of thousands of people on our subscribers list. Mm-hmm. But how many of those are really actually engaging?
Yeah.
And I think when you cull that, then what you're actually doing is you're actually really
giving space
listening
for the people you want.
Exactly. And that actually then helps you grow. So I think things like that are really super important.
Yeah.
And I think it's brave to do it. But
it's
it is
really
necessary.
Because like you say, when you go into a retailer, they will ask, how much
is
your space?
And this is the thing, the questions that they're asking is, you know, it's like, definitely, the big retailers love viral stuff now.
Yeah.
They're so onto TikTok and, you know, those kinds of things. Because they know, I think what's really important is the average consumer in a supermarket is aging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have real problem with getting a new audience. And what they're looking for, most of them will be looking for, is that you're not just stealing from somebody else, because that just means all you're doing is
from existing market share.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They want you to grow the category, and being able to, you know, reach your consumer in that kind of new way
Gen
is something.
I mean,
that
we've
the big
seen it.
Don't
it
do.
Was over lockdown, wasn't it? Those like ice cream things. I can't remember what
Mini
they're
moon.
Called. That's
yeah,
it.
Moons.
They absolutely blew up. Yeah. They sold out of Tesco like every
single
day.
And she's a wonderful female founder.
I mean, she's incredible, isn't she?
Yeah, she's absolutely awesome.
But that all happened from TikTok.
Yeah, it did.
That literally all happened. Yeah. So the supermarket didn't need to do anything for that, and they were getting constantly sell out. Yeah. And that proves that actually the brands need to do their own marketing and they need this themselves, don't they?
Yeah, so you're totally right. I totally agree.
Which I guess goes into that sort of retail and online piece.
Yeah.
And again, it's a conversation that we have, I have probably every day. Like, oh, Kate, you know, we're selling into Tesco. We only do a small percentage online. We don't really focus into it. I guess that relationship between, you know, retail and wholesale and online D2C, how is that for you? When did D2C and online become a point of, oh God, we need to put some effort into this because actually it's our most profitable channel?
Look, I think an omni-channel is fundamental now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, being in one channel is not going to be good enough for you.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in terms,
Grace is in so many different places.
In so many places. And if you take like a, you know, one of the older snacking brands, Grace, which now is owned by Unilever, which were always originally D2C, know, is now everywhere in retail because obviously you're only going to expand in a way. So I think, you know, is to be in that omni-channel route, you know, multiple facilities. I think for us, I think it also matters about what your product is, mm-hmm. because, you know, you've got something heavy and really expensive, it's going to cost you a lot of money to yeah. send anything anywhere, and therefore it might be better retail on the shelf yeah. is better for you at first.
Yeah. yeah.
Kind of thing. But for us, you know, we've been trying to build our D2C for quite a few years. What accelerated it was COVID.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think, and I think
when COVID hit, we were very, really very much retail based.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, we didn't really have a website as such. We had something. It wasn't really, you know, it wasn't very user friendly.
Yeah.
All of those sorts of stuff. And it highlights to you that, you know, that multiple channel is really important. And D2C, I think, is if you have the right product in terms of it's light, it's easy to use, and people buy it in that way.
Yeah.
I think, is it Tallow and Hash that have done really well? Yes. I love, smells amazing. You know, Tallow and Hash have done really great. And even like one of my friends who runs Hunter and Gather.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I totally, love Amy. Yeah.
Oh, Amy's gorgeous. She's amazing. She's epic. Yeah, again, very much started on that D2C route. I think the thing is, it is a great way of getting information yeah. about your consumer. Yeah. You are speaking to them directly,
yeah.
which is excellent. But for us, we were forced into it.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have been. We should have been yeah. more on it. But that kind of helped us start. And then that's kind of worked for us. But we still have to play around with that.
Yeah.
Because some people think like, I don't actually want to buy a whole box. Yeah. You know.
And you don't just want them buying one bag, right?
Exactly, because that's not profitable.
No. So that's when you can look into subscriptions.
Exactly, you can look into subscriptions, but also you can understand how the model needs to work. You kind of understand what's the sweet point. Is it like, actually what I really want is a mixed case?
Yeah.
And I'll buy a case then.
Can I do like a pick
the variety part, you know, the variety pack and stuff like that. And I think what you do have to be careful in D2C is in the sense of offering people everything, because the minute you do that, you're going to spend lots of money repacking, you know, sort of thing. Yeah. And most of us are sheep. We like to be told, you know, we like to be like, you know, okay.
Don't want to think,
yeah. but still think that we're making a choice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think, so that's a really important part to learn about D2C.
Yeah. And then what about, so a lot of our clients, they rely really heavily on NPD, so new products, right? Mm. What does the future of NPD look like for Poundless?
Ooh,
are we going to have like some exciting bombs?
Yes. Yes. Well, we're actually in the middle of NPD at the moment. I'd love to tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Obviously.
Damn. But I'll send you the first packets. So we're in the middle. I think one of the really important things in terms of Poundless, but also people within our sphere, is innovation is key. And I think it's important to innovate because that's what challenger brands are. I think it's important to innovate because you need to continue to capture more of your audience and stuff like that. I mean, they always used to be do one thing and do it well. And that's obviously worked for certain people. Ariel.
Yeah.
You know, in that way, people know. But I think what is important is that you have to be very careful about like crossing category.
Yeah.
Does your brand cross category? So if you look at, say, like a big brand like Rude Health, which obviously was originally cereal, went into milks, been very successful.
Very, very
they
successful.
Tried to go into snacking, didn't work.
Didn't work.
You know, yeah, exactly. The consumer couldn't kind of resonate. No, yeah. So I think that's really important. For us, ours is gut. We are driven by gut. We are an on-the-go snack gut. Now, that could fall into multiple places. But I think if we suddenly started talking about, you know, something completely ridiculous, like sugar, you know, it's not going to work. You know, I think you have to be really careful in your innovation, stay true to your core values.
Yeah. Don't get kind of caught up in the excitement.
Well, exactly. And also don't listen to the white noise.
Yeah.
And I think this is what's really important. And lots of people doing this. It's a really big thing in startups. Is you suddenly start to concentrate what everyone else is doing because it's like the FOMO effect. Oh God, why have they got in there? Why should I do that? Oh, maybe we should make a thing. Maybe we should make a that now. Yeah. You know, because when we started and I was talking about gut, everybody thought I was crackers. I mean, what are you talking about? Gut, food, disgusting.
Yeah.
How's that going to work? No one's going to care about that ever. You know, and I think that's important to stick to your values.
Yeah.
And not deviate, as hard as it is, into a category that just looks like it's now on trend. I mean, look at the moment, everything's gone green, right? Everyone's eating matcha and everything. Right. Now, of course,
can't say I'm not the biggest matcha fan.
Right, but the call, okay, so it's brilliant. It's working. It's the perfect head. Yeah. They're awesome.
Oh my God, I'm my favourite matcha brand.
Exactly. Well, glad they're flying the flag, right?
Yeah.
But there can't be 200, 300 matcha brands. It's not going to work.
No.
Right, because that isn't what's going to happen, you know. And the big guys, they'll make, you know, like they'll put a bit of matcha in. And if that fails, that's not a problem for them. But when you're a startup, that's going to be a big bloody problem.
Huge problem.
So don't just follow a trend.
Don't just follow a trend. Cause it's not sustainable, is it?
No,
whereas
it's not.
Perfect Ted, for example, that is what they do.
Well,
that is what they do, and they're going to smash it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm saying that because I am their biggest fan.
Excellent. And they're great, and they do what they do well. And they can evolve that innovation in that, because that's what they're known for.
Yeah.
If they suddenly started making things purple, it would look odd.
It's going to be weird,
You know, you're in it now.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think what we see as well is, you know, clients will have a product range, right? Mm. They'll have had it for 10, 20, you know, whatever, many years.
Cull it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And their customers are, you know, some might be buying, some might be just watching, and then they create an MPD, and it, you know, we've got one of our clients became their best-selling product. So I think there's a, you know, there's two sides to it, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Stay true to your values, but also try and think about your grace, your consumer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, we try to do some consumer listening on things like that, kind of get...
What would you like to see more
of? Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that's really important, also bringing your audience basically on the journey with you.
Yeah.
Because it's... People want to be heard.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, if you're asking, well, what flavour would you bring out? Or what would you do? Or what would you like Boundless to do next?
Yeah.
I think it's...
They feel involved.
Yeah, exactly. Feel involved, because then they feel like that kind of, you know, the journey.
It's like you they're care about them as you, well, don't they?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They feel like they're cared about by the
brand. You're listening to them. They're being heard. And I think that is important. I think to your point, though, also, Kate, about in terms of like, you know, having multiple innovation, I think you have to be really careful. You should know what isn't selling and why it isn't. And if it's not, rather than just holding on to the end, just think, okay, I need to cut that.
Yeah.
And I think if you look in terms of retail, very different on D2C to a certain degree, right? But in retail, they're not going to give you, I'm not going to walk into Tesco's and then they're going to go, by the way, I've got 12 flavours of chips.
Yeah.
So can I have 12 flavours? No, you'll get two or three, Kathy. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not PepsiCo.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that you don't just innovate for innovate's sake.
Yeah.
You do it with thought.
With thought and purpose.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to cut back on products that you've got, you know, if they don't work. And I think it's also really important for a business, because you're cash flowing products that don't sell, and that is not a good position.
No, I was going to say that's a really, really difficult one, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So 2025, we are in, what, we are now March, can't believe it. 2025 and looking into the next sort of year, what are you guys focusing on predominantly from a growth and marketing perspective?
Give us a teaser.
Yeah.
Don't tell us too much.
Don't give it all away.
No, I mean, okay, in terms of like, so we've obviously got campaigns that will run through the summer. I think we are really strong about that kind of repeating our kind of purpose and repeating that in across multiple channels in order to do that. Because I think even though you might think you've heard it a million times, the whole point is not everybody has.
Yeah.
And that's what's really important, I think, because I think it can be, you can easily go, oh, should we say it like this now?
Yeah.
As opposed to, no, let's
keep going, on repeat.
And I think, you know, like Nike, just do it. That constant, just keep saying it.
Yeah.
So I think, so we've got obviously summer campaigns worked out and things like that. We've also got, obviously, we do Guttober. So we've got a big campaign in October about Guttober, and we've got some really big retailers that want to get behind that
now,
which is great. And we've been, obviously, this would be our third year of Guttober.
Awkwardly looking off camera for confirmation.
Third year, please. Third year. And the first year we did it, we kind of like started, it was kind of not that too much noise. Last year it was a lot bigger. This year it will be a lot, lot bigger, which is great.
Yeah.
And spreading that word. I think in terms of us, in terms of like where we are in terms of pushing, you know, we are again quite across a lot of omni channels now in terms of D2C, we're in food service, we're in travel, we're in retail, high street and stuff like that. And I think it's like, leveraging on that. I think sometimes we all think that, oh, more stores we get, the bigger we are. Well, in actual fact, what's better is to make sure the stores that you're in are, you are smashing your radius out. Yeah. And then that way, when you go on to the next bit of leverage in terms of volume of multiples that you're in and stuff like that, then you can use that. I think it's really important to make sure that you've really smashed what you, where you are and what you've done. So as much as we want to run like you, like Forrest Gump,
you just have to take those moments.
Yeah,
you do.
You have to rein back.
Analyze the data.
Yeah.
Number one thing.
Analyze always the data. No. Data is going to help you get everywhere now, and you can't really survive without it.
Yeah. So one word for 2025, what would it be?
Exhausted.
And we're only a few months in.
One word. Boom.
I love it.
Yeah. And I think that takes us to the end of it. Thank you so much.
I've loved being on here.
It's been so much fun.
Oh, I feel a bit emotional.
Can I stay?
Yes. Thanks. You can just sit in.
Thanks, ladies.
Honestly, thank you so much. I can't believe you're our first guest. And hopefully everybody's going to find it really useful, because your story is just, it's real, right? You're doing it. You're living and breathing a brand and you're growing it, which is absolutely amazing. So Thank you, ladies, so much.
I've had the best time.
It's been so good.
And as everybody's following along, we are on our second episode. So subscribe,
rate, review. Tell us what you want to see. Who do you want on next? Yes. You know, all that exciting stuff.
Mary Berry.
Oh my God, I die.
I know. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies.